Okay, keep it to yourself. Whatever you think.
That wasn't bad.
That was just great.
Corby, what did you think of the new music?
Well, no, not yet. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Marjorie Egan and Jim Browder streaming at youtube.com/GBH News. We're at the library tomorrow. Filmmakers Ken Burns and Sarah Botstein will be there live at 11:30. CNN's John King, etc. We're joined now on Zoom by food policy analyst, multiple James Beard winner, Corby Comer. Corby's the executive director of the Food and Society Policy Program at the Aspen Institute, senior editor at The Atlantic, and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy. Now you can ask him, Marjorie.
What'd you think, Corby? Did you hear the tune?
Oh, I thought the music was great, and especially your talk about locally owned businesses.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
We learned that from you, by the way, and we've tried to live it.
You're such a nice guy, Corby. So we were just talking with listeners about money concerns, about going away on vacation or going out to restaurants. There's a great piece in New York Times talking about how basically income inequality has gotten so severe and the middle class has shrunk so much that the places, pizza joints that people used to go to, even those places have become unaffordable for lots of Americans.
I love they quoted a guy named Daniel Cox, who's a pollster by profession. Mm-hmm. He does surveys about income, and he's got a family of four, and he can't get out of Pizza Hut for under $100.
Yeah.
So he doesn't go sit down with his family. And he thought, I want to see, are people sitting down with their families at these so-called fast casual restaurants anymore? And the answer is no. Pandemic hit restaurants hard. It raised prices. And families just don't go out to eat very much. It's a very long piece of the New York Times about sort of the rise and fall of chain restaurants, which were kind of terrible that they were appearing on highways and driving out family-owned smaller businesses in towns, in small towns that had been independently owned for generations. They quote Jane Stern, who wrote the Road Food series for decades, saying, you know, they were death, they were the enemy, they were the worst things ever. But what they did was allow families to go out and sit down together. And now they're dying because they can't afford the service charges, they can't afford the rent, and people aren't willing to spend money going out anymore, which is a real shame because they're not talking to each other and they're not meeting people from other classes in their own communities.
By the way, that part about, I wish we had said this earlier, the things you said at the end about the pluses of going, I'm not the most social person ever, but it is true, when you go out, not only do you socialize with the people you went with, but it's unavoidable that you'll have connections with other people there that you wouldn't have otherwise, which is really a pretty important part of living, which disappears.
I'm not an academic specialist in class mixing, but I'm always very alive to the idea that public transport is one of the few places that mixes all classes anymore, and that there was a whole, it's class neutral ground. One of the study authors said about Chili's, that a Chili's near a highway, more than anything else,
good.
Civic institutions. I think this was an MIT Sloan School of Management data analyst who said Chili's was the place where the most zip codes with the most income variation mixed. And I thought, wow, I want to know more about, you know, what it was about Chili's. But now these places are dying and going out of business.
So, you know, they sort of have you coming and going. So that moderate to middle income family can't afford to go out to a restaurant with their families. And so obviously what you're doing is you're eating at home, but groceries are becoming more expensive. We can talk about that in a second, but I have to say, Donald Trump really deserves it. We rarely give him credit here. This intellectual curiosity that he exhibits when talking about groceries was actually really moving.
He spent
a couple of moments earlier this month musing about a term that most Americans, Marjorie and me included, barely understand the meaning of. Here he is.
He's coming.
No, maybe he's not.
That there is a school system that's going to start
that's not. Okay, in any case.
Groceries.
It's only my
favorite. He was talking about groceries.
Soundbite in the whole show.
Oh,
here
got
it is.
Now. We've
okay,
got it
let's
now.
Try
it
again.
It's an old-fashioned term that we use, groceries. I used it on the campaign. It's such an old-fashioned term, but a beautiful term, groceries.
Beautiful.
It sort of says a bag with different things in it.
Now, you're somebody who's in the food world. Did you know that it sort of says a bag with different things in it. Be honest here. You never thought of that, did you? Honestly, yes or no?
Groceries? No, no, it never occurred to me.
Well, when you think about it, it's like George H.W. Bush having no idea how much milk costs, even though I don't have any idea what milk costs either, and I buy it all the time. But he's probably never been to a grocery store, right?
That's a good point.
He eats in the restaurants, at his hotels, gets room service.
Do you know he used the term on the campaign? Did you know that?
I did not know
the term groceries.
But I do. All I remember him talking about is clean coal.
Clean coal.
Clean coal.
Sort of says a bag with different things in it.
A bag with
groceries.
Thank you very much.
It was George H.W. Bush who didn't know that you could scan a product and self-check out.
That's what it was.
He said, what will they think of next?
Okay, so back to groceries. I assume it's obvious, but why are grocery prices going up too, Corby Comer?
Tariffs, and it's going to be terrible for restaurants, and it's going to be terrible for... There's a piece by Pete Wells in today's New York Times about restaurant owners panic buying, like everybody is with cars and everything else, and figuring out, okay, what are the imported ingredients that I can't do without? So I've got to start stocking up. And then 3 days later, Trump postpones the tariffs for 90 days, and they put the panic ordering on hold. But that's what it is for grocery stores. They don't know how long their current stocks at current prices are going to last and when it's going to go up. But there's also a piece in today's, in the Weekend Globe, about Chinatown and Latino restaurants in the North End driving up prices. And the owners there are really confused. But there was a very good quotation from a woman named DeStefano at Cafe Paradiso, a great place on Hanover Street, who said, though she doesn't import directly, she said this about future tariffs: whatever I pay, it's going to go to the consumer.
Yeah, she was very...
Okay. That's what's happening at every supermarket.
Yeah, she was very frank about the whole thing. So, Corby Comer, this is a really appetizing story about how we ended up with a government agency to check what was in our foods because of milk being thinned with dirty water, coffee containing bones, ground pepper full of dirt, cocoa packed.
This is the early
1900s
sand. We're talking about.
Yeah. So that's when the United States decided that they better have an agency to regulate and inspect the food system. But apparently that's Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the guy who's going to make America healthy again. He doesn't think we need that?
He doesn't know what's being cut. It's clear from everything he says when he's asked about, well, you said you care about chronic disease. Are you aware that you just completely fired everybody at CDC who's been working on a chronic disease for decades? Same thing with tobacco control. But now the administration is allowing meat processors to speed up production lines. So it sounds like, okay, that'll be more efficient. Maybe meat prices will come down. What it does is allow huge cattle to be hoisted up on chains while they're alive.
Oh, God. This is so upsetting. This story is so upsetting about how they torture these animals.
And we've talked about this under Trump 1, and they were trying to speed up lines on pork and chicken production lines, and they were kind of headed off. But now there's no checks on it, and the inspection is much less underfunded, terminating 3,500 employees of the Food and Drug Administration, in which he's saying is a revolution. Consumer watchdogs are saying it's a safety bloodbath. What's especially galling about the FDA cuts is they're mostly industry-funded positions. It's not even saving the government money. It's just making the public unsafe because there will be so many fewer inspections. Rubio, under enormous pressure, reinstated government credit cards. Who cares about government credit cards? Well, it's what the food inspectors used to buy the samples of food that they were inspecting. And so under pressure, he restored hundreds of credit cards, but the workers apparently still can't use them. They still don't work. And so this system is being eroded, and there's much more of a likelihood that the poisons from the beginning of the 1900s, there's a great book by Deborah Bloom, who wrote a strong op-ed in the New York Times over the weekend saying the poison squad days, the poison squad were these strapping young men that the government hired and fed knowingly contaminated food to. They documented what happened to them, the illnesses of them. aroused public outrage. And in 1906, there was a Safe Food Act that was greatly strengthened in 1938. And I got to be on an American Masters episode about this whole poison.
Oh, really?
As a talking head. So I was a, you know, a famous food inspection authority, which I wasn't, but they were very, very kind to feature me. And Deborah Bloom's book is terrific. But she's saying these bad old days of the great American stomach ache, which is what a commentator called the whole 1890s in the US because of adulterated food, we could be right on the track back to the great American stomach ache.
You know, realistically speaking, I know it's very hard to predict, but I read the story and I was just, I was terrified. I don't have any idea what the food manufacturers are willing to try to get away with that they maybe wouldn't have been willing to try to get away with in normal times as compared to now. How much at risk do you think we are, realistically?
Harry, remember the Peanut Corporation of America, like RCA, except it was PCA, and it was a CEO was sent to jail because he was knowingly allowing contaminated peanut products to go out to save money, and I think 11 people died. And there's going to be much more of that. We sort of, for comic effect, talk a lot about nuts and bolts and nails being found, metal shards for manufacturing processes in a lot of products. And, you know, mostly it's found, it's reported, it's recalled, but they're not going to be found. These checks and balances are not going to be there. So it's less the idea of an evil CEO like the peanut guy saying, send them out. We'll just, you know, wait for people to die, but we'll make a lot of money in the meantime. It's not so much that kind of cynicism as just inattention and sloppiness not being caught because there are fewer inspectors making random inspections. And, you know, it's been going on for decades, the idea of industry voluntary regulation. Mm-hmm. Republican administrations for decades have been saying, let's just leave it in the hands of industry. They know what they're doing. They'll fill out the paperwork. And we don't have to send pesky inspectors, or we'll announce well in advance our inspections and not randomly surprise them to see what's really happening on the meat slaughtering line. But now there's going to be fewer of them for even so-called random inspections.
What are other Western nations, what kind of food inspection systems do they employ, Corby Cummer?
They're much higher, you know, but it also begins with regulation of what goes into their products is so much stricter. And that's one thing that RFK Jr. has been saying. Why has the United States been allowing in these adulterants and food colorings into ingredient lists that Europe has been banning for decades? Again, voluntary compliance. So industry has been allowed to say what's grass, generally recognized as safe, for since the late 1950s, early 1960s, and they've been, you know, just putting whatever they want into food and waiting for them to, waiting to be caught. Again, it's relying on industry to keep us safe. Europe doesn't do that. So one of the things that RFK used on the campaign trail was, we're going to be just as strict as Europe. They're also much stricter for inspection.
I was just going to say, sorry to interrupt you, but I was heard Trump complaining about how some European countries won't take our meat. Well, they won't take it because they don't like all the hormones that are in it, and in some cases antibiotics in it. And that's the reason a lot of people don't want it. That's how a lot of people got started shopping at Whole Foods when their kids were little, because they didn't want their kids to eat meat that was full of hormones and antibiotics. And they'd be going into puberty at age like eight. What?
Chlorine-washed
right
chicken.
Right now it's chlorine-washed chicken that was the Europe and England wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, well, I don't want to eat chlorine-washed chicken either.
Oh, well, then neither do I, Marjorie. Yeah. You know, Corby, we should have brought this up earlier because it obviously relates to grocery prices.
I tell you, what do I put up with, Corby? You know
but
what
farmers
I mean?
Are also getting hit coming and going. I mean, there were great stories, horrible stories, late last week about soybean farmers in red states, which overwhelmingly voted for Trump, not being able to access their principal market, which was China. And the story we read over the weekend was about workers. And we all know what huge percentage undocumented workers are to bringing, you know, working the fields and livestock and whatever they do in farms. And a lot of undocumented people don't want to go to work because they're afraid of getting snatched right now. So what I read in this piece was, which I was unaware of, speaking of other countries, a lot of other countries have special immigration laws that allow farm workers to become citizens much more expeditiously. I don't know if it's out of kindness to the worker or if it's out of kindness to the employer, the owner of the farm, but is that an accurate picture of what's happening elsewhere, and how bad is the picture here?
Yeah, and of course, it's kindness to the employer. The visas in the U.S. have apparently been for, I think, 3 weeks, ridiculously short periods, whereas in Europe, it's seasonal. You can come in for 6 months, that's the time when the farmer needs you for the harvest, and then you leave. That's going to be your visa permit. And, you know, it's enormously efficient. And countries all over the world rely on guest workers to pick their crops. Yeah, in the U.S., it's 3 weeks at a time. It's just crazy. Whereas in New Zealand and Australia, it's 6 months. You know, even in Mexican and India, they also allow a pathway to citizenship for these guest workers, which the U.S., you know, for years, it's been very controversial. Some Republicans even wanted a pathway to citizenship, but now that's on the way out. But apparently Trump's getting the message that farmers need these people and is thinking of making some kind of carve out to allow some of these guest workers in, because otherwise, especially the citrus crop, they're just going to go unpicked. Mm.
So, Corby, we figured we were in a real dilemma this morning about something one of the cabinet secretaries said.
Yes.
And we figured you were the person to clarify. It was specifically the education secretary, Linda McMahon. And the good news is she was speaking about K through 12 or maybe pre-K, I don't know, speaking about schools. And what we were unclear about is whether or not she meant to be talking about artificial intelligence or steak sauce. And so here is Linda McMahon, McMahon, talking about one of those things. Here she is.
That there is a school system that's going to start making sure that first graders or even pre-Ks have A1 teaching, you know, every year starting, you know, that far down in the grades. And that's just a wonderful thing. Kids are sponges. You know, they just absorb everything.
They
and
do.
So
including
wasn't all that long ago that is, we're going to have internet in our schools. Whoop. Now, okay, let's see A1 and how. And how can that be helpful?
By the way, I want to be as
and
nice as I can
it,
be.
And repeats it.
Can she be this stupid? Obviously, what's happening is she's reading a speech that says AI on it, and the I looks like a number one, or maybe it is. So she starts talking about steak sauce rather than artificial intelligence. Do you have any observations about that, Corby Cummer?
It was certainly good for Heinz. Kraft Heinz owns A1.
Oh, they do. That's great.
We certainly agree. Best to start them early. Let's have A1 on every cafeteria table.
That's right. Yeah, and they were saying in one of these stories that people online were saying, well, maybe what they need to do is teach the kids how to be drinking the A1 steak sauce, and how can they get to drink it? And the smarter kids, maybe after they learn to drink that, can move up to Thousand Island dressing at their kindergartens. So...
Oh my God.
When we think about book bans and history bans, and they'll ban everything to do with LGBTQ, but they'll allow in Mein Kampf by Hitler.
I know. It's sad. You know, it's very sad.
Maybe some snake sauce over Mein Kampf.
We're going to talk about, before you go, and it's 30 seconds, is the agriculture secretary as out of it as the education secretary is?
No, apparently not. She knows more about agriculture. She's more of a business person. She's saying, I'm going to go along with RFK Jr., who's saying he has the authority to ban ultra-processed food from school lunches. He has no such authority, but I'll go along with him.
Right.
So, no. And she's not as much an ideologue or a kind of dope as the A1 sauce person, but we have to see. There's, you know, there's lots of cautious hope in the food world about both RFK Jr. and Brooke Rollins.
Very cautious.
We just have to wait to see what they do.
Corby, thank you. Before we thank Corby, then I have a correction to make about something we said in the last hour.
Oh, what did we say?
A person who works with Neil Young, who we both know, texted us. His cancellation in Ukraine had nothing to do with worry about getting back in the country. He was concerned about bringing his crew into a conflict zone.
Oh, war-torn area.
So he was worried about their safety there, not about getting back into the country. So our apologies.
Thank you for that.
for
thank you for that correction.
Corby, it's great to see you. Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.